Avi and Scott have introduced themselves, and now we'll have Bob Finicoli introduce himself.
That's how you pronounce it. That's great. Thank you, Sari. Sari? Sari, right? Hi, everybody. I'm with Aptix, and we're kind of a different kind of company than the other companies that are that you've heard from, I think, today, in that we focus on day-to-day applications that end users and employees use to communicate and to collaborate. So a little bit about Aptix. We've been around for 17 years. We're a public company. We have we provide services to over 500,000 users in 75 countries, and a third of those are in healthcare. You got that? Okay. You got that?
Beautiful.
So as I was saying, a third of our clients are in healthcare, and that goes anywhere from small doctor offices to mid-sized clinics to one of the largest private healthcare providers in North America. And the services that we provide are really centered around hosted exchange, Link, SharePoint, archiving, encryption, mobile device management for bring your own devices, backup, and recently we brought on servers on demand, but our focus again is around hosted exchange. And as far as healthcare goes, we provide the services that the healthcare providers use to comply with HIPAA regulations. And we have an onboarding and implementation team that helps them plan their move to the cloud, also provides the what environment they're going to go in, and then lastly, we have the ability to sign business associate agreements. So for HIPAA, we're pretty solid there. Sorry?
Okay, so now we have our panel ready to go. Roman, who spoke earlier, had a plane that he had to catch. He apologizes, so it's not that we forgot someone, but we do know he's flying. So now, following up on that first keynote regarding data storage, what are the alternative implementation strategies for storing patient records and, you know, other healthcare data? Can there be more than one strategy per organization for the sensitive data? What works best for what types of data? So let's start with Avi.
We generally see that there's different groups inside the same organization that deal with the different kinds of data, ranging from sort of the internal operations of an organization to sort of the internal IT, to the people that deal with the systems that actually have the patient data. And then we also see sometimes the larger volume data, the imaging and whatever, that's not always integrated. There's sometimes some separate systems with APIs that talk. And we generally see pretty classic technology, databases using SAN or whatever the high availability method is. So for Windows, that'll typically be SAN. A lot of people wind up virtualizing. A lot of people also still use dedicated hardware for that. So sometimes there'll be shared arrays, multiple machines. Sometimes there'll be virtual machines or dedicated machines on SAN. We don't see a lot of variation in that. And a lot of that is because the actual applications that are storing that data are purchased rather than developed, so they don't. The actual end implementation site doesn't get to set the architecture, so you don't find anything very exotic in what we've seen. That said, we don't generally deal with coming in and doing in-house solutions. We're seeing the DR side of what actually gets put out in colo, where people are looking for assistance running infrastructure.
Thank you, Avi. We'll go right down with Scott.
I'm not sure this is an area where I'm particularly schooled on as far as, what you should use. I think the general idea is, yes, you can have multiple types of storage. I would also say that it's important to choose the right type of storage based on what you're attempting to store. As Avi mentioned, block storage is great for certain kinds of storage. And I think that, in general, pick the storage properly for what you're trying to do. We've seen some missteps in environments, for instance, where NFS was chosen as the storage protocol for all workloads.
For database.
And yeah, and we would say that that's great for VDI and other kinds of deployments, but for Windows workloads, not necessarily the best. And then I think the other thing I would say is that based on the devices that you use, some devices are not well suited for some protocols. So, you know, certain kinds of SANs don't do NFS well. So be careful, you know, the product that you choose based on what you need. But I think the general idea is that make a choice, make an informed choice, and use a proper solution based on what it is you're wanting to store.
Thank you.
Well, in my world, we don't have really customers that store patient healthcare records or data. So the closest that we come to protecting data in an example of how they use it as an application is email, for instance, that they may use encryption, manually based encryption or policy based encryption, where they actually can set a rule. And just to give you an example, there are HIPAA templates that they can apply. And then separately, they can write their own rules and then go something like, if the email that's being sent has an attachment, automatically encrypt the email and then send it off. So it's a different world in that. But what I would say is that just advice in general about what kind of provider or who you're going to talk to and how they're going to do your deployment is that in our world, again, I would say that companies that can sign BAAs are critical, right? And then also for the types of data centers that they're in, I would say like tier 3, tier 4, type 2 SSA 16 would be where you want to start your looking, you know, if you're not federal and you're not FISMA. And then what I would do as an extra step is ask for their uptime numbers for at least like the last six to 12 months and see what uptime they're delivering. And that would be a good place to start.
Thank you. And now, the same question for software applications. What are the alternative implementation strategies for medical practitioners, pharmaceutical research firms, and other healthcare entities in selecting cloud-based software applications? Which cloud programs are best for what functions? And we'll start with Scott.
So, you know, my impression of this question is to find software applications in the cloud, you know, that are good. And it kind of rubs me the wrong way, because that suggests we're going to adjust our business process and how we work based on what's available in the cloud. And I really take a much different approach. My opinion is to just, you know, obviously, you know, work on what you need and what fits the business, and then find a cloud solution that fits that rather than the alternative. So in our implementations, typically we design private cloud solutions, meaning whatever it is you're running, we can run in the cloud. So I hope that's a suitable answer to that question. But
that's why we're up here to share our differences. Let's not sit here and go yes, because I think they have other questions.
Yeah, right.
If you're just starting out, email is a great application to start in the cloud. It's been around since, I think, just after 2000, 2001 around. Over a decade of use in the cloud for years and years, and obviously everyone's familiar with it. So if you have to make the plunge and you're not going to dive in full forward, it's a great place to start. And then the applications that surround that for healthcare would be policy-based encryption, as I stated, or any kind of encryption. Archiving, link secure instant messaging, because it is secure, so you could talk with people within your own company and even have records of that if you need to. But all of those around there are just probably a simple way to get in.
Very good. Avi?
This isn't really an area that we get into. We get into infrastructure, and people tell us what applications they want to run, and we're more at the infrastructure and supporting the applications and the underlying infrastructure, and we're not really making recommendations about how they should, to your point, how they should run their business. So.
Well, that's fine. And guess who? This next question starts right at Scott. What did you hear in Scott's keynote regarding workflow processes that suggests the best implementation strategy for that aspect of migrating to the cloud. What implementation strategies are best for the various operational functions or tasks of healthcare organizations? Which workflow processes will be most improved by moving them off-prem and onto the cloud?
Well, I think it's interesting. My idea would be, I think email is a good first step, but I think it really depends on, you know, where's some pain? What is it that you're struggling with that you're looking for a different solution? And I think that would be a great place to start. Email is a good one, although I would pick the email hosted email provider very well, and my counterpart here might be a very good choice. We also build, depending on compliancy issues, many of our clients, we host an email server dedicated to them rather than public. We also have a public email server, which many of our clients do use. It's very secure, and the experience is, I would say, identical to having their own email server, but ultimately in a compliancy solution, we'll be dedicating those services to customers that require that.
And generally, we get involved with people, again, that are running their own infrastructure, and where we start to get involved in them moving off to the cloud is either for archival or backups to a common solution or a private solution, or trying to take some of their budget that's for DR or in some cases the high availability and then leverage that into using space they have or managing equipment they have, or sometimes we'll start with actually their public facing marketing sites and then bring that in and then be able to leverage that investment and relationship into taking on DR and then eventually going into primary once people are very comfortable that the stack is right and the management processes and hands off are right.
As far as we're concerned, it's a different kind of world. So workflow for us is I think, as many terms in cloud are, they can be different definitions for things. For workflow in our world, I guess the closest correlation would be to a business plan, project plan for a deployment of a migration or something like that. As far as workflow goes in an application like healthcare, where you're taking a patient through the system for different tasks and things, we're just, you know, really an email provider in that sense. So the workflow is what's done by another company who would use us as a piece of that whole process, if you will. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Harry, do you want to answer his ask?
You know what? It's fine because we're good. And since we have one less panelist, just introduce yourself.
Sure. I'm Brian Johnson. I'm a senior director in IT for Johnson & Johnson. And to answer your question around where are there opportunities, at least in the pharmaceutical healthcare space, certainly starts with CRM. So what we're seeing with customer relationship management is the need to be mobile, to have rapid development, rapid application development, rapid deployment of applications. So a provider like Salesforce is very, very interesting to us. The other space that I think really has a lot of opportunities in our clinical space. So you're talking about large sets of data to the point I think Scott made that may be touched once or twice and then stored away, but also need heavy compute power so that we may be collecting in, you know, 10,000 to 15,000 patients or patient data for 3 or 4 months looking at several trends. We need to do statistical analysis on that and then we're done with it. So we need the cloud to scale up to do the analysis, and I think it was an example of 60 days to a couple hours.
Right.
We need that, and then we need to store that data because we're really not going to go back to it in a real way for a long period of time.
Right. It's like Tim was saying with that the X-ray of his son's
broken arm,
and that look at it, you know, 1, 2, 3, and then it's stored, but because of all of the requirements for the next 25 years, although the child will be growing, that data must be stored. So thank you. And, you know, we can keep this panel a little more informal and give the audience the opportunity. So going back now, and this will open up the whole thing. when a hospital or a research lab or a health insurer is preparing cloud implementation strategy, which of the three aspects we've discussed so far should receive the highest priority? How and where to store their data? What software programs to access from the cloud? Or what operations to migrate to the cloud? And I think I have some ideas where we're going to go here, but Bob, because Avi stole your spot, go for it.
Thanks a lot, Avi.
Sure. I don't know.
So from our, that's a tough one. Really for us, we focus on what the business problem is first. And then comes the goals of the organization, and then if they have any requirements. So once you start there, I don't think you can go wrong. A couple of examples that I can think of. Inova Health Systems started with the application. They needed exact functionality that came out of SharePoint, and that was the starting point. So everything worked around from and flowed from that. And then the other, the large healthcare provider I mentioned, I'm sorry, I can't mention their name contractually, but they started out with data storage and consolidation. That was their primary reason for moving to the cloud and bringing in all their offices into one location. And then again, that set their own timeline project and priorities and things. And so they're different, but yet they dictate what happens next.
Very good. Avi?
I'll take door number three.
You'll take door number three?
Which is, there's an old saying, you guys go start coding, I'll find out what they want. That's the risk. I mean, often we do get involved when people have selected what they're trying to do and what the application stack is, and then we're trying to support it. But behind that, before it ever comes to us, there's absolutely a process of trying to figure out what goals you're trying to accomplish, then driving the software and solution, and then underneath that is what the infrastructure is, and the connectivity and the storage and the compute and the disk and the monitoring processes and all that to support it.
Yeah, I'm just going to go with these guys. I think first issue is, where's the pain? If you have a problem that needs to be solved, then you're probably going to start there. I like Brian's comment about CRM. If you're missing a critical component, Salesforce, there's other CRM providers that are great as well, and it can be really streamline a project to choose a solution that's out there, as long as it's a solution you need and you choose wisely, right? So I think it's really driven by what's the business need, and for years we just brought great technology to businesses and said, hey, you ought to have this, but we learned after a while that we really needed to learn exactly what is it. So we typically look for pain, and when we find those pain points, then we can architect solutions around them.
Roman made an interesting point in his presentation that we were just talking about. I was just up in Boston this week talking with some of my friends at Akamai. I was there for 10 years and left my brother behind, still runs the network group, and I know a lot of people there. And we're talking about when Danny Lewin came and said, we're going to run SSL for people. And I said, that's never going to work. No one's ever going to trust us to run SSL. And he said, well, we're not their people, but our processes are about 500 times better. Now, if you look at Microsoft, Yahoo, Google, Akamai, what they do internally, they push a button and everything gets deployed. That's the holy grail. That's the DevOps. That's the stateless management. You can only do that if you control the software. And so when you look at Salesforce and why do people trust Force.com, it's because the entire system's been designed so that it can be deployed, it can be audited, and it can be monitored. So that's really sort of the point that Roma made. It's this process around it that enterprise finds very difficult to replicate that is now understood to be a reasonable trade-off versus trying to do it yourself. And so we see that in a lot of different, across not just healthcare, but other verticals.
Scott?
I'd like to pick on Roman a little bit. Would that be okay?
That's fine. He's not here to defend himself.
I actually would love to talk to him, and I enjoyed his presentation. But I did find it somewhat interesting that he made the comment that the cloud's insecure, but rush to it as quickly as you can. I really have to object to that comment, and I'm not necessarily going to fight the argument that it's secure, but what I'm going to say is that in every single one of our customer deployments to date, it's far more secure than what they had before they moved.
That's right.
So it was very interesting, and in one of our very early deployments, this goes back about four years ago. Well, sure, of course. One staff at a client site said, I'm not going to go, I'm boycotting it. We said, why not? It's insecure. And I didn't want to get into a battle or an argument, but the fact was is that the level of security that they had in place when we came in was as dismal as I've ever seen. I mean, literally, the password was SWAT1234 for 20 people in the organization. Oh. They had entry level, they literally had a 19-year-old person who managed the phones, who was reading the emails of the executives. We found tax returns on public shares in their storage, on their server, mapped right to everyone's drive. So they had all of the company's financial information was visible by all, and everyone knew everyone else's password. And that password had been in there for 5 years. Actually, I think it was six. And then, I can just go on and on and on, right? Small server sitting on the floor in the printer room. You could see the marks from the vacuum cleaner banging on it every single day. And, in another case, we had a client who had their whole data center was stolen. In an on-prem solution they called on a Monday morning, everything's gone. What? We got robbed. What? What'd they take? Everything. There's a wire sticking out of the wall. So, the fact is that our cloud solutions are very secure. Does that mean that they couldn't be hacked? Anything can happen, right? Mm-hmm. You'll never find me building a nuclear plant on the shores of an island prone to big waves, right? I think that the idea is things can happen, and we probably don't know all the things that can happen. But the fact is, the security we're delivering to our clients today is an order of magnitude better than what most of them have.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is the servers in the broom closet that the janitor who lets themselves in every night, that's not so secure.
Not so secure.
Not so secure. Okay, so what other aspects of migrating to the cloud, in addition to data, apps, workflow considerations, need to be part of the implementation strategy? How do you prioritize these considerations? Avi, you look like you're ready.
Sure. I mean, the part that I haven't heard, although it's probably assumed, is sort of the operations. How do you actually make it go and 24/7, whether it's a security problem or an access problem or debugging, someone can't do something, and how do you debug where it is through the different kinds of processes that an organization goes through? And that's generally not the first thing that you look at, but that winds up taking a fair bit of time, and it's part of any of these solutions.
Okay, I have one that's Scott, actually, you said it. You said it nicely about the people using the keyboard. End user experience. If you, especially when the end user is like the CEO or the senior management team, and if you bring them a bad experience, everything is miserable. And when you think about the cloud, you've got a couple of different ways to look at that end user experience. First is just the move of themselves. How many will be moved? Where will they go? How will their, in our case, email, how will that flow? Who will support them and answer questions and on what side of the fence? And that's really got to be well thought out and planned. Then there's the other side of it. When you move to the cloud, are they going to be in a new application? And if so, how much different is it? Who's going to train? For how long? Who's going to support them after that? If that's not taken care of, all the other, the technical pieces and all that stuff where it's all working, it doesn't matter because it will be a horrible experience for all concerned. So I would really concentrate on the end user.
Very good. Scott?
Yeah, I think since I said that, I'm going to stick with it.
So you're letting me steal it?
No, it's totally great. I think it really goes back. Exactly. I think that the end user's experience is really critical because, once they've got a bad attitude, then it's really tough to draw it back in. So I think that's why we care so much about that. And then I really like the idea of a process for reviewing how people are working. Sometimes for me, it's just going on site and being there and finding out you're turning the key on and getting out, pushing the car and slamming it in gear to start it. There's a better way. And I think from some aspect, that could be teams of people within the organization. We usually advocate this user acceptance group, and this could even be, transition to this sort of ongoing, process of looking how people work and finding ways. And I think in many cases, it's a training opportunity. Yeah. In fact, I would say that's in many cases maybe the part that's missed. And, we tend to focus focus on the technology, but do we train the user? And I think that's a really important step, because you need good race cars, but you need drivers who know how to drive them. And so that's something I'm passionate about. But I think a part that's missed is really developing the user around how to use that technology and learning from them. And I think that for technologists, if you do go down, and really sit with people who are working with this the technology, you'll find in many cases that their experience can be greatly improved by simply training and teaching, or learning that there is a technical solution to a problem they're having. And if we're not down there, kind of in the trenches with them, we oftentimes call it eating our own dog food. And we use our cloud as well. And I've purposely kept a stack of equipment that probably represents a $100,000 investment that we no longer use, because we use our own solution along with all of our customers. And by being at that level, we're intimately familiar with the struggles or the frustrations. And then in many cases, we're able to say, well, gosh, if this isn't working for you, we can do it like this. Or if the user experience is not at a level, I like customer delight much more than customer satisfaction, but if we're not delighting the user, then let's really look at why not. And then, really be aware of the day in and day out performance of the system for them.
Well, you guys are all obviously very much part of your businesses. So let's look at your own experiences, and what has been the most effective or exemplary implementation strategy for migrating to the cloud that you've witnessed? Why? Like, who's done it best? What lessons can we all learn from what you've already gone through?
Me?
Go.
Okay. In our experience, the last time I'll mention that third largest private healthcare provider in North America. We had to move 80,000 users in 30 offices throughout North America, and we did that in 5.5 months, which was months under schedule. And not only that, we have to go through a process, but we actually have that company be a reference for us, which is huge, because we can't use their name and vice versa. That said, I can tell you why things can move that well and that smoothly. And again, it's not rocket science. That holistic plan that takes through all the steps, the pilot, all the things that are really part of the right way to do things. But once you have the plan, what was critical in that and other great implementations that we've done is that the customer side project manager is not only a person who's fully engaged in the project and having frequent and open communication with the project manager on our side, but here's the key. That person has access to the business process owner and to decision makers within the company, because as good as this gets, there are variables that arise. There's always things that you can't anticipate that will come up. And so if someone is there that can go back, make a quick decision, come back to the team, and then figure out the next go forward plan from there, it's smooth and you have a great implementation and everybody's happy. So I would strongly recommend that.
Sounds good. Scott, you want to go?
Sure. Carl wanted me to start the presentation with, I'm the guy who's called in when the fit hits the shan. And so I really haven't witnessed any good deployments other than the ones we've done.
It's funny, I was
I think it's interesting. We many, many cases we're coming in and we're asked to deploy solutions in and around existing solutions, and boy, what a headache that is, right? And the simplest and I think most successful deployments are the brand new ones, right? Whether we call it a forklift upgrade, where we get to remove everything that's there, bring in new equipment, or even time in many cases it's the new company where they don't have anything. Oh, thank God. And this is actually one of the beauties of a cloud migration for us, is we're able to go to the client client and say, here's some good news around it. Now, first of all, there is some bad news. So the first conversation I have with clients is before, you know, what have you heard? What do you know? One of our very first customers, we said, have you heard of the cloud? They said, oh, yeah. And we said, well, what have you heard? Well, our provider we're working with now is going to bring a small business server in, and they're recommending Office 365 for hosted mail. And we said, well, gosh, you know, with a small business server, mail's about a five-minute endeavor. You know, click, 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 and Exchange is up and running. Certainly, there's administrative concerns, but in a small business, this can be a very, very simple deployment. So our concept was is that, you know, simply selling you yet another small business server, another piece of hardware, another project that in many cases don't go well, you know, to us, this isn't a real solution for you unless you like that. And they said, no, we hate it. So what we presented them with was the idea that we'll architect a solution for you, and there is zero risk because we get to build and stage and test and do the user acceptance testing before you ever migrate. And even during the migration, your on-premise equipment is simply just unplugged and left there running in the corner. We have a fallback plan, and there will be no interruption of service. And ultimately, there's zero risk involved. And that really lands, you know, very well with our customers. And, you know, and beyond that, it's typically higher risk. You know, so I like, you know, the projects where you come and say, well, we have all this new equipment. So we want everything wiped off of it. And we want all the new stuff put in. And we want all the data put back. And my response is, that's fine. We do that. We've done it. And we've done it well. But please understand, that's a little bit like saying you want to do open heart surgery on the quarterback at halftime, and he needs to be back in the game at the beginning of the third quarter. So really, you know, there's a lot of risk in those kinds of deployments. And in fact, I'd say they were fraught with risk. But nonetheless, it's an environment that we come into. So a cloud migration is really beautiful because it kind of epitomizes that forklift upgrade where we get to build net new stuff. I was talking to...
too late?
Yep.
Thank you.
See, Scott will regale us for hours. But we're going to call in our next panel, and then Scott can regale us at their booth during the network break or cocktail hour. What are we up to? I think we're up to cocktails after this next panel. And Scott and his crew are down in the left corner. And Bob is over in that side of the room. And Avi's here with us. So we're all good. And let's bring in our next panel.